Hi everybody, it's Jennifer Cook DeRosa. In today's episode, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to go behind the scenes. And this episode, I think, makes me just a little bit uncomfortable to talk about because I think that we're going to have to talk about some of the uncomfortable things that colleges do to parents to kind of separate the parents from the dual enrollment or the college process. And I don't want this episode to come across as me bashing any of the colleges because that's really not the case. I think what we're going to talk about today is how FERPA, F-E-R-P-A, how FERPA really makes a big impact on your relationship with the college, why that matters to you, and how to kind of navigate. So let's just go ahead and jump in and we'll get started with all of these frustrations that parents experience. So as your teen's guidance counselor, you're going to be the one who is handling a lot of the college decisions as far as if they're taking classes, if they're earning college credit, how they're doing that, where they're going, and so on. This is, of course, because they're in high school and they're being homeschooled, so these are all going to be partly your responsibility as the parent. You're the decision maker, right? You're the one that calls the shots. But colleges don't really respect or even acknowledge the parent, and it creates a little bit of friction. Now, I want to talk about why that is, because it's not personal. It's not that the college personally has an issue with you, and I want to explain very carefully why they behave the way they do, so that as you encounter some of this friction or some of this pushback, that you recognize where it's coming from and how to kind of play the game so that you can get the information you need, help your student in the way that they need, and not have this frustration, because it can be super frustrating, okay? So despite the very high level of parent engagement in the homeschooling for college credit community, you have to understand that what we do is not typical, okay? Colleges typically deal with the high school administration, all right, which is usually not a parent, right? And they deal with the students, also not a parent. So you have, in a normal situation, you have from the college to the, let's say, the public high school, and they are handling administrative discussions and things like that and records. And all of that goes around the parent. So the parent of that student is not looped in on a lot of these things. So colleges are not used to dealing with the parents. Now, here's what's interesting. If you are homeschooling, you are a high school administrator, aren't you? Right? We are all operators of our homeschool, our high school. And so we do need to have that access. But because we also wear the name tag parent, we get a lot of pushback from the colleges. And I can tell you that as a rule of thumb, colleges typically do not deal with the parents at all. I've been on several college tours where they completely separate the parents from the teens and they send them off onto different tours. Now, do we wonder why they do that? Well, we know why they do that. They do that because they have different conversations with the students as they do with the parents. And of course, adolescent brains are still developing at that point in time. And so they're using different sales techniques for students than they are with the parents, of course, right? So we know that this happens, but why? Why does this happen? Well, one thing to know is that your place in the food chain is mostly to blame with why you're going to get the answers and the friction and the pushback that you get. It really has nothing to do with you. But colleges deal with parents every day. This is not their first time. So even though you will try and be creative or think of ways to get the information you need, sometimes they're just going to shut you down because they get these questions and they get these inquiries and they're not going to share them with you. And some of that is because of the laws, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But most of it is just because that's the way that it has always been. Colleges are used to dealing with adults, which is to say a high school graduate who is sometimes 18 or over 18, right? So it's the rise of dual enrollment programs that have created this interesting dynamic. So a dual enrollment program is when a high school student takes a college course. Now, in public schools, This often happens at the high school. So again, this is not a process that loops in a parent. The parent might have to give their permission to let the student enroll, but the parent's not involved in any of the registration process. The student's school handles that. Well, when we're talking about homeschooling, we are talking about the parent as the school administrator. So that parent does have to take an active role in enrolling the student. Homeschool parents are registering their students directly with the college, so the students are not attending public school to take a dual enrollment class. In fact, they're enrolled at a college. And who does that? The parent does that. So in many cases, we may have students as young as age 14 that are going to be enrolled in dual enrollment, and all of this is going to be handled by a parent. So typically, a college that admits a student is not dealing with a parent, okay? So it doesn't occur to them that parents would be part of the decision-making process, because they're either going around the parent by using the school district themselves, or they're dealing with a high school graduate and they're dealing just with the student. So homeschool parents can sometimes get offended by this. I was offended by this in the beginning because I didn't quite understand it. And it was important that I have access to this information, right? Like, we need to be able to see our students' transcript. We need to be able to get in contact maybe with their advisor. We might need to know what the textbooks are, how to get registered for the textbooks. We might need to pay a bill. We might need to, pay for those registration fees or tuition or things like that. So there's a lot of reasons why we need to be involved in the process. And so being excluded from it can really cause a lot of problems. So in the very beginning process, when you have not yet enrolled, and that's either dual enrollment or as an enrolled student after high school, in that process, you're prospective. You're a prospective student. And so prospective students, they get treated a little bit better. Prospective student parents also get treated a little bit better. You might get invited to go on tours or attend events, recruitment events, have, always been very popular. Those types of events invite parents to participate. But let's talk about once your student actually enrolls, and particularly in the homeschooling for college credit community, where a lot of students are in high school, they're enrolling as a distance learning student because you're not always locked in to attending classes in your local town, right? So you're doing this online. There's a lot of paperwork that has to be processed. You're going to want to check and see if this process needs to be filled out by the student. There's a very, very strong chance that when you're filling out the application information, that you'll need to give all of your students' information, and that the application needs to come from the student, even if you are the one helping them complete it. Now, this process is because of a huge overarching federal law that guides your students' privacy, and the colleges are very, very pressed to make sure that they follow all of these laws very carefully. Okay, so FERPA, F-E-R-P-A, is the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. And this was in 1974 when this started. In the very beginning, it made a lot of sense because it meant that the schools were not allowed to share your students' academic records, their educational records, with outside parties. So think of it a little bit like HIPAA for healthcare, but in this case, it's their academic record. Now, this is great. We don't want our schools and our colleges to sell our students' information or to share our information with third parties. We don't want our students, being on all of these lists to get marketed to and things like that. So FERPA feels like it makes a lot of sense. And it does prevent the colleges from sharing your teen's personal information. So it is a good thing. The issue here, however, is that in a homeschool, things are a little different, because a parent, which is normally regarded as an outside party, in fact, the parent is the school administrator in most cases. So an argument could be made that the parent is not an outside party in this instance, that they are the school administrator and therefore they should have access to the records. But this is not yet the case. So I do hope that somewhere down the line, an enthusiastic homeschool parent could fight this and challenge it. Maybe Homeschool Legal Defense Association could get involved in fighting to validate that homeschool parents are not outside parties. But for now, That is not the case, and schools and colleges will see parents as outside parties and therefore subject to FERPA. So just know that that is the reason that you're being denied. It's not because of you personally. It's because they're terrified of violating the law. So once enrolled, whether it's dual enrollment or after high school as an enrolled student, parents are not going to have access to any of the records or any of the professors. So under no circumstance are you going to be able to email a professor on behalf of your student. The professor will not have that conversation with you. Their information, even their grades, their financial information, all of it is considered confidential. So this, again, this can be a huge pain if your student is enrolled and you're trying to pay their bill, or you're trying to find out which course they need to register for, you're trying to do some of this stuff just very quickly. It can be a pain to realize that you won't have access to their accounts. So as you move forward with your homeschooling for college credit plan, communication with your student, your teen, is very important. They need to understand the FERPA laws. They need to understand that you may need access to some of their information, and that the college is always going to sit on their side. But it's also very important that they understand that you need to be able to conduct some of these things with them or for them. And so you'll have to work together with your teen. And I do have some recommendations. I've gone through this with my four teens, and I realize that might sound like 14, no, four, F-O-U-R, teens. I had four sons. So I've gone through this with my four teens, and we've had this come up at many different colleges. We've had to do lots of different workarounds, and between all of the different colleges that we've used, we've managed to get through it. And so you'll be able to get through it too. It just takes a little bit of understanding of the system. So I have a few different tips that you can use. Okay, so the first one, which is so important, parents, is to store all of your teen's login information, their email information, and their passwords for their college accounts with your homeschool records. Now, this should be part of your permanent records. This is something that you should hang on to the entire time that they're in high school. If they took a single class for dual enrollment in ninth grade and it's in 12th grade, you should still have all of that information. Colleges are not going to purge that. You should be able to go in and access that information. This will be important later because they'll need to request transcripts to send to future colleges, and they may need to be able to log in and make sure that they don't have any holds on their account or whatnot. But you need to explain to your teen why FERPA exists and why you're going to need access to their logins and their emails and so forth. And you want to save this. This is not a reason to spy on your student. And of course, you know, that's not the intent at all. But I do always suggest that you have this login information because your student may lose it over the years, especially if they change emails and they have their own email account later. It's just really important to keep this. And so I always have access to all of the accounts for all of my teens. And I do very strongly believe that the spirit of FERPA was really not designed to deny a homeschool administrator access, but that's just kind of the way that it has come to be. So have that login information. That's very, very important. Okay, number two, tell the college that you would like to have a FERPA waiver. So the waiver is going to give you limited permission to access some of their records. So for instance, you might need to file a waiver, a FERPA waiver, with their advisor so that you can actually sit in the room with your student during their advising session. If you don't have the FERPA waiver on file, they can tell you have to wait in the hall. And that's very upsetting, particularly if your student doesn't really know the right questions to ask or what the purpose of that session is. There was a lot of situations over the years where I've had to help my student with something that they didn't understand as well as I did, like why we needed a certain class before another one or a certain section. And so these are things that they might not understand as well, so they may not be able to articulate as well if you're not in that session with them. So having that FERPA waiver on file with their advisor is going to allow you to do that. Now, it doesn't give you access to email the advisor on their behalf. All right, so we'll talk about that. but you also can have a FERPA waiver for the different departments. So for instance, you may need one so that you can meet with the financial aid office. And we had the same situation come up. I had a FERPA waiver on file for my son. He was going to be transitioning from the dual enrollment program onto the degree program. And my husband actually went with him to his financial aid meeting. And can you guess what? We didn't have a FERPA waiver for my husband. So I had permission, but not him. So it can be annoying. I get it. It can be annoying. But just think about these waivers as giving them the clearance to talk to you. So having these FERPA waivers on file is super important. And you can do this every year with all of the relevant departments that you interact with your student. And particularly as long as they are minors or until they are done needing your assistance. Okay, number three, dual enrolled students almost always get issued a college email address. Okay, so that's going to be an address that ends in .edu. It's important to know that some colleges do not allow their employees, okay, or their professors, so this is the advisors, financial aid, their teachers. Some colleges do not allow the employees to respond to a student's personal email address because of FERPA. So for that reason, it's important to make sure that your student, once they are issued that email address, conducts all of their communication with the college using their college-issued email address. And I know that some students don't use their email address, but if you're talking about registration or questions about a class or things like that, it really does need to come from the student's .edu email address. And that's going to save a lot of miscommunication. Okay, and then number four, you are going to have questions for the college, but these questions need to be asked by your teen. Okay, so you may have questions about a prerequisite, you may have questions about a section or a time or a syllabus or a textbook or things like this, but if you as the parent send an email from your personal email account, it's not going to get answered. Okay, so instead, here's what you're going to do. Your student is going to write the email, and you can do this with them, okay? And it's going to come from their .edu college email account. Now, if they don't have an email account, obviously you can't do that. But if they don't have an email account, then the college doesn't have this restriction in place. So it'll be fine for this to come from their personal email account. But this should not come from the parent's email. This should come from the student. And as your teen becomes more proficient at using email professionally, right, how to do that, and you know, you can guide them through this. This is a good teaching opportunity. But eventually, you'll be able to just tell your teen, you know, to email a certain department or a certain professor and ask the question. We got to that point by the time our kids were in around 11th or 12th grade, but they had all been doing dual enrollment a lot. And so they were, you know, they picked up those skills as time went on. They didn't have those skills immediately. So you really will have to help your students in the beginning. But once they have those skills, then they'll be able to email those professors or those advisors and get those answers that you need. So this is definitely a learning opportunity. But you can help your student. You can help them construct these emails to make sure that they are asking the question that you want, but that they're also a learning opportunity for the student to learn how to do this. So I hope these quick tips will help you understand that when a college doesn't answer your question or won't give you the answers that you're looking for, they won't even talk to you, that you understand why. That it's not you personally, it's that they are obligated to follow the FERPA laws, and that you can figure out ways to kind of work within those laws to get your questions answered. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Cook DeRosa, and you've been listening to Homeschooling for College Credit podcast.